My name is Dick Anderson. I'm an alcoholic.
Amen.
And I'm grateful to be here. I remember when the flyers were coming out and the word was coming out that the new place was starting called the Howe Place. That decade, there seemed like there was a lot of activity around Atlanta of things that got started. Not everything that got started then stayed. But this has stayed, and then stayed because the people, like tonight, were here doing the work. And when you think about 30 years of a number of people in a meeting and how many other lives are affected over that long period of time, how many lives have been saved, how many lives have been changed, how many marriages have been saved, then there's a tremendous amount of work that God's done here. So I just, congratulations on 30 years and the work that you've done. One of the great gifts of AA is to be able to listen to the story of one of us who has had his life changed tremendously. And our speaker tonight is one of those men. I've known him for many, many years, and he's one of my best friends. And he is one of my best friends because we can pray together, we talk together, we work together. And he is a man who is constantly seeking how he can please God better. And that's the simplest thing way I can say. If you want to be successful in AA, is just find out what God wants you to do, and if you can please God, everybody else is going to be happy. And on page 83 of the big book, it says, our own behavior will show them more than our words. A lot of us do a lot of talking. Lee does a lot of walking, and his story will tell you how dramatically his life has changed. And so please welcome from Orlando, Lee.
Hey, don't kiss me while I'm doing this, okay? Put that in your pocket.
Okay. Are you ready?
Are you ready? Yeah, we're ready.
Hi, everybody. My name is Lee. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey.
And this gentleman had no fear of me kissing him. When he put this on, as he suggested, there might be some concern. I'm a member of the Central Group downtown Orlando. We 53 meetings a week, very similar to this. In fact, the feeling I've gotten here tonight is just like my home group, and I love my home group. My sobriety date is November 20, 1984. I really appreciate Tom's call to me. I don't know where Tom's at, but he called me and asked me if I would be available to come up here, and thank you very much. This is my kind of deal right here. Eat a lot and speak, yeah. And share. If you're going to go somewhere and share, feed me barbecue, you know? So thank you very much for that wonderful dinner. My daughter came with me, and Hannah, would you please stand up? She's got a black belt in Alateen. Well, that's good. That's good. That's good. That's good. And she is just, Alateen has done, you know what? These kids, they go to Alateen, and you know what we get in Alcoholics Anonymous? They get the same thing when they get together and share and open up, and they have the steps, they have everything that we have, all our tools, and they implement those things in their lives, and they get changed lives, and they get filled up with goodness and happiness and joy, just the same thing that we get, freedom. So I'm very grateful for what Alateen has done for my daughter. It's Dick picked me up and brought me over here today, and thank you very much, Dick. I was going to say, when I got up here, I was going to say, Dick's my best friend, but Dick said I was one of his good friends. So I want you to know that Dick is among some of my friends. Somewhere on the list of my many, many friends. No, but I'll be more generous than Dick. Dick's my best friend. We do talk a lot, and we pray a lot together. And I know Dick loves me and believes in me, and that makes me feel good when I can pick up the phone and have a problem in my life or something, and you don't immediately get, well, what did you do wrong? Instead, you go, well, those people don't know you, or they wouldn't think that. Because I know you, and they're off base somehow. Someone that's got your back and believes in you. And Alcoholics Anonymous has given me many relationships like that today. I don't know how you guys drank. But I'm going to tell you how I drink. When I drink, listen to this. When I drink alcohol, I have difficulty controlling the amount of alcohol that I drink. Something happens to me when I put alcohol into my body. I develop what seems like an unquenchable thirst for alcohol. And for a long, long, long time, I didn't care how much alcohol I drank. I wanted to drink. I wanted to get drunk. I wanted to get drunk, 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 drunk. And I did. I got as drunk as I could get, and I loved it. I loved what alcohol did for me. But the day came that I did not want to lose my car, or I wanted to get it repaired, or I wanted to get a little money to get something done in my life, or I was upsetting my family. I was having some problems and trouble along with my drinking. And I said, I'm not going to get drunk, 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 drunk tonight. I'm just going to get half drunk. And I got all drunk, you know. And I found out, I learned this all by myself. And nobody had to tell me this. Once I put any alcohol into my body at all, I can't control the amount I drink. And that's a bad problem. When you love to drink the way I love to drink, and you can't control the amount you drink once you start, bad problem. But I've got another problem. And it's a lot worse than that. I mean, our book says it's my main problem. I've got a mental problem. I've got a problem with my mind. Because when I'd really had enough, I mean, I put my foot down and I said, that's it, the end. I'm through, no more, the plug's in the jug, everybody's going to be happy now. All of a sudden, I changed my mind. And having a drink of alcohol seems like the best idea I've had in a long time. And I'll go out and have a drink of alcohol, and I'm in all the trouble I was maybe just 2 weeks ago. And it got so bad for me that I ended up in a room called Alcoholics Anonymous. And since being here, I've discovered that it doesn't get a lot worse than that, you know. I heard a guy in a meeting share once, he said, on the way to the cemetery, I stopped at an AA meeting. I said, man, I identify with that. But I'm happy to announce that as a result of coming to Alcoholics Anonymous, getting a copy of this book and asking a man that was familiar with this book and had a lot of experience with this book, a personal experience with the process in this book, asking him to help me, I'm happy to announce that I have not changed my mind about a drink of alcohol in over 28 years. And that's a miracle. And I love what Alcoholics Anonymous has done for me. I mean, I cherish what Alcoholics Anonymous has done for me. Because of Alcoholics Anonymous gave me 13 years with my grandfather. Alcoholics Anonymous gave me 16 years with my grandmother. And because of Alcoholics Anonymous, my little daughter, 14-year-old daughter, has never had to watch her daddy crawl around in his hands and knees in his own filth or go to a correctional facility to visit her father. I love the freedom that Alcoholics Anonymous has given me. So I have a problem with my body. I have a defect of the body that once I take a drink, can't control the amount of alcohol I'm drinking. I have a defect of the mind. No matter how bad it or how essential it is that I leave it alone, I'll do it again no matter what. And after having come to Alcoholics Anonymous, I've learned that I have a defect of the will, that I think and act only out of self-interest. What I want is the most important thing in my life. And in Alcoholics Anonymous, we call that a spiritual problem. Our book says that our first requirement is we be convinced that any life run on self-will can hardly be a success. Any life based on I have to get what I want to be happy is doomed to fail. And that's the only thing I knew when I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, get what I want. Our book says that we're under a delusion, that we can wrest satisfaction and happiness out of this world if we only manage well, if I try hard enough. I can be happy if I get what I want. And that just doesn't work. It doesn't work. It never worked for me, but that's all I came here with, and that's what I sought. There's two problems with living life based on I have to get what I want to be happy. The first one is, I don't always get what I want. And that's hell. And listen to this. All my resentments came as a result of not getting my will in the past. All the anger and depression I may be experiencing today comes as a result of not getting my will in the present. And all the fear that I have in my life today is my concern. I'm not going to get my will in the future. So not getting my way is terrible. But sometimes I get everything I want. And guess what? That doesn't get it either. My daughter and I, when she was little, we were watching television. I saw a perfect picture of the self-centeredness of the alcoholic who got everything he wanted. And it was in the Discovery Channel, and it was the African dung beetle. Got everything he wanted. All he wanted was a big pile of dung. And what he would do, he'd find one, and he'd walk over to it and crawl on top of it, stand on his front legs, and with his back legs, he would start pushing and rolling a little ball of it. And as he would roll that ball, it would get bigger. And he would roll it, and it would get bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger. When it got so big that he could not move it any longer, he crawls to the top of it, bores a little hole down into the middle of it, crawls down inside of that thing, and lives there. I said, my God, that looks just like an alcoholic. My whole life is crap. I've always been that way. I didn't need a drink of alcohol to become like that. I don't ever remember a time in my life when I wasn't like that. I have no explanation for this, but I don't remember a time in my life when I didn't feel less than, inferior to, or fearful of everything and everybody around me. Where does that come from? But our book describes that as self-centeredness. Self-centeredness. My life was based on me getting what I wanted and me being happy and me pleasing me. And I come into Alcoholics Anonymous and you flip the whole script. It's that our lives today are based on how we can make another person's life better, what we can do for others. Complete opposite of what I knew to be the truth and what the only thing that could make me happy could be. I became convinced that it was my family that was disturbing my life, and when I was 15 years old, I ran away from home. And so it didn't take me long to really screw up my own life. After having been out just a very short time, I ended up living with my grandparents. And I was 15 years old. It was there that all of a sudden I became very interested in girls. Girl lived across the street. I was just nuts about. She was 3 years older than me. She was a cheerleader. And it was beautiful. And I remember she had a car, you know. She just had the whole package, I guess. But I would peep through the window and watch out of my grandmother's window and look until I could see her drive up in that car. And she'd get out, and she'd have those pom-poms, and she'd run across the grass, and I'd watch her, you know, and I'd go, God, I love her. I love her, and I'm going to tell her I love her. I'll tell her. And one day we were at school, and she walked in the classroom, same classroom that I was in. I wasn't ready, and I knew immediately I wasn't ready. Because I couldn't turn my head to look at her. I couldn't think. Sweat. I couldn't breathe. I had to run out the door. I could not stand to be in her presence. So I got ready. I'm ready now. I'm ready. I'm prepared. And there's a dance after the ball game in the gym. And I'll go. And I'll see her at the dance. And then I'll ask her to dance. Then I'll hold her. You know? And I'll tell her I love her. Then I'll kiss her. You know, I mean, I was ready. But I could not move. That song, first song would end, and I just stood there. I said, well, maybe after the next song. And the next song would end. I could not go and ask her anything. And I saw that I had a problem. I saw that I had a problem. And I said, my life is over. I cannot be happy. I am stuck. There is no answer for this unhappiness that I feel. Now listen to this. Our book in the third step prayer says that we are in a bondage of self. A bondage of self. I'd never heard of anything like that until I came to Alcoholics Anonymous. And I can look back today and I say, I was a person who was in a bondage of self. And I hadn't even had a drink of alcohol. I had a problem called bondage of self. and I was looking for an answer, and I got it. When one day my grandparents were gone, a buddy of mine came over to our home when they were gone with two bottles of Boone's Farm Strawberry Hill. You know. Listen to this, 15 years bondage of self. I drank one bottle, he drank the other one. 10 minutes later, I'm up on the roof of my grandparents' house screaming out my declaration of love, you know, for this girl. Free, completely freedom. Freedom. I'd never experienced that kind of freedom before. I just, omnipotence. I just stood up there screaming, I love you, I love you, I love you. And she came outside. And some of the other neighbors came outside. And her parents came outside. And I didn't care. I did not care. I said, you make the stars shine. You make the sun rise. And she just buried her face in her hands like this. I knew instantly that she wanted me. You know? So alcohol was doing that for me that I could not do for myself. First time I drank it. I said, I'm going to drink this stuff for the rest of my life. And I almost did. I almost did. Short life. But I almost did, except for you. So anyway, listen, no explanation. A week later, I'm with my buddies. We're on the way to school. We pool our lunch money. You get a case of Boone's Farm for $7.20. You know, I'm a morning drinker 1 week later. You know, why wait until evening to feel so good? You know? And I have no explanation for this. I don't know why this is the case with me. It's my story. But 3 weeks after having my first drink, I remember being at a dairy treat with some buddies of mine. One of their mom's Pontiacs, that about eight of us. And they're all out talking at the dairy treat, doing what you're supposed to do. Talking to people, interacting with others. We stopped and got three quarts of Budweiser on the way there. Guess what? I'm in the back seat all by myself with all three quarts of Budweiser. I said, they are so dumb. I am the winner. You know, a lone drinker, drinking alone. 3 weeks later, a lone drinker. No explanation. But, you know, I look back today and I can think after having added alcohol to my life at a young age, it was as if somebody just took a match and just threw it in a bucket of gasoline. Whoosh! Not like that for all of us. It was like that for me. I've heard people say their pilot was always lit. All they needed was the fuel. And it was certainly that way for me. No explanation. But I took off. And I grew up, my uncle was chief of police in the town that we lived in. You know, and in a short time, I was just wide, crazy, wide open. No explanation. But alcohol got the allergy and the obsession gripped me early in life. And many of us could have gotten here many years before we did. But I, no explanation, I don't know where I got this idea, but we began stealing. I'd never met anybody that stolen anything before. I didn't even, we stole something. I remember we stole something. I said, I felt a little twinge of conscience. I said, I don't know about this. But in a very short time, I learned to just love it. And I wanted to steal something from everybody. And God, I tried to. It was so big, we couldn't move it. I'd lay down next to it and claim it. But we were rampant in the community that we lived in. And I just wanted to drink, you know. The guys I hung out, they wanted to drink some way I wanted to drink. And so we would steal. 16 years old, I was in juvenile court. My grandfather, oh my God, we got to help that boy. 17 years old, civil court, assault. My grandfather said, oh my God, what all the neighbors think? When I was 18 years old, I would walk down the road where my grandparents lived. My grandfather would see me run inside the house screaming my grandmother, oh my God, he's coming back. And by the time I would hit the door and push my way in there, my grandmother's clutching her purse to her like this. My grandfather's standing with his arms around the portable television set. And that's the last place I would go. I went there when I was sick, hungry, tired, dirty. I'd been to the party, and the party had smoked my tail. But I stayed as long as I could stand it. And then I would go home, like it was like a hospital. I would go there just sick, dirty, tired, completely out of gas, just run to the ground. And my grandmother would wash my clothes, feed me, and try to, you know, get me back into some kind of health. And I would sit on the couch with her, and she would press a dime in my hand and said, "Please call us. Please call us. We just want to know if you're alive or dead. Your grandfather will come get you." And my grandfather's gotten up in the middle of the night and come got me. And she'd be bawling her eyes out, and she'd say, I'd say, "That's it, Grandma, I'm through. I'm through," and I meant it. It's those guys I'm hanging out with. It's their drinking's getting me drunk. And we were clueless. We knew nothing about alcoholism, nothing. Anyway, when I was 19 years old, I went to prison for the first time. And I knew if I ever got out of that place, I'd be a different guy. You've heard of scared straight? I thought of that a long time before those other guys. I was scared straight. And grown man's penitentiary, and just any kind of crazy thing you can think of. You that know, you know. You that don't know, you don't need to know. You know. And so anyway, I knew that if I got out of there, I'd be a different guy. And the day I got out, and the day my grandparents picked me up, I was convinced. I mean, I had every opportunity in life. I'm not going to blow it this time. I've got a job. I've got a car. I've got a great situation. I've got people around me that love me. I've got support. I've got everything I need to have a successful life and be happy with all the love that I'm surrounded with. And 2 days out, I got a pint bottle of Jose Cuervo, and I don't know anything about alcoholism. But anyway, 2 days, pint bottle of Jose Cuervo. 2 weeks later with the same guys doing the same old things, and 2 months after I got out of that mess, I was right back in there again. You can take the next 12 years of my life to stick them in the garbage can, because I was in and out and in and out and in and out. Every time I got out of jail, I thought I was free. Every time I got out, I knew all I wanted to be was a regular guy. That was my dream. Have a job, have a car, live somewhere, have some clothes. You know, it'd be great to get an education. It would have a girlfriend, just have a girlfriend. I'd see some guy and he'd have a car and a job and a girlfriend. I'd say, that's it, that's my goal. And I'd have a drink and just whew, all bets were off and knew nothing. Alcohol is not a problem for me. Alcohol helps. Alcohol helps me stay together, help me pull together another day. It helps me forget. And just to move forward with this thing, it was November of 1984. Not much had changed in my life. Alcoholism is a progressive illness. And I wound up down in Central Florida, and I was arrested, which was not uncommon. And it was there in the Seminole County Jail that I was separated from alcohol. And sick, sick, sick. The last 3 years of my drinking, I know it's only by the grace of God that I'm here. I can't tell you how many times emergency vehicles came out. I have a hazy memory of flashing blue lights, red lights, somebody picking me up off the ground, my head busted open, taking me to some kind of facility or some kind of place and trying to do something with me. And I on one occasion at least, I know I stood outside a place and begged them to take me, please help me, please do something with me. And not a nickel's worth of insurance, nothing, offering nothing. And they took me in, and 3 days later, I had some boots on. I was trying to bury the front of my boot in that lady's desk, that nurse cussing her out, saying, "You better let me out of this place right now," and walk out the door and immediately go to alcohol. Because the madness, I had the madness. I had the madness. I didn't know anything at all about being through with alcohol. I knew one thing, I was through with me. I couldn't stand me, I hated me. I was sick and tired of me. And there were no answers for me. I didn't come to Alcoholics Anonymous with a lack of pain. I came here with a world of pain. I came to Alcoholics Anonymous with a lack of hope. There was no answer for me. I'd received 27 years in prison sentences by the time I was 30 years old. In Arkansas, back at that time, you get a 20-year prison sentence and pull 4 years, they let you out. You know, get a 7-year sentence, pull 2.5 years, they let you out. And so when I was in the Seminole County Jail, there was no doubt in my mind what my future was before me. And because I knew I was going back to penitentiary again. And I said, good enough. The people I had hurt, the problems I'd caused for everybody in my life. And I loved my family. I loved my family. But I knew, and I felt like I was just the sorriest person on earth, I guess. But I was just standing in the jail cell, and all of a sudden, out of nowhere, I heard AA meeting. And my first thought was, well, why would they have one of those here? no liquor stores here. A man came to a jail. And that's how I got here tonight, because a man came to a jail. Jerry had never been in jail. Jerry, he'd been to Vietnam. He was a war hero. He knew about that. He'd been to vote. He voted. He did, you know, he's a citizen. Stuff I'd never done. But Jerry was a guy that wanted to bring a meeting to men or women that could not go and get a meeting for themselves. And I thought Jerry was there for me. And, you know, since then, I've learned that Jerry really believed that thing that Bill Wilson said about, we don't help other alcoholics because they're alcoholics. We help other alcoholics because we're alcoholics. And Jerry was there to save his own life. But anyway, I said, I think I'll go to that AA meeting. No virtue. I went to that AA meeting because they write your name down. And when I go before that judge, I need some record as to, I'm trying to do something about my life, you know. When I go before a judge, I needed something. My God, I had nothing, nothing. And so that's why I came to Alcoholics Anonymous. That's as much as I could dream, imagine, or hope that any, that you guys could ever do for me, was you were worth me going to a meeting and getting my name on a piece of paper for a judge. And what ended up happening is November 1984, I went to a meeting called Alcoholics Anonymous. And I got a whole brand new life. More than I could ever have hoped, imagined, or dreamed possible for a guy like me. And what ended up happening was one night, Jerry, he said he'd just done his fifth step. I didn't know what that was. But he said he would. There were 19 men in that meeting, and he said he was going to share some of the things that he'd told his sponsor that he had never told another human being. And Jerry told a horror story, is what he told. Incidents in Vietnam and stuff like that. Things that I said, I don't blame that guy for wanting to die after some of the stuff he said. But there he was, alive and free and happy, and was there only to try to help us and reach us in some way. And I came to believe in that guy. And he gave us all copies of the book Alcoholics Anonymous. And I had a lot of problems. If you're in jail, you got problems. And I had that bad food problem. You know, God, I hate the food. They feed you 3 times a day. A lot better than I had been doing. I had that court situation, and I had a lawyer, a bad lawyer, and a free lawyer. They give you a lawyer. I could never have gotten one, but first time I met him, he came in a little cell where I was at, and his pants were split from here all the way around back to here. He said that happened when he got off the bus. I said, this guy's in worse shape than I am. I had nervousness and anxiousness. I had to sit up straight in the middle of the night and scream. I had torment, and I had madness. I had madness. And I didn't have my answer. And I'd sit up in the middle of the night and scream and scream and scream. But I had a copy of a book called Alcoholics Anonymous. And I read that book. And very simply, I read in the third chapter about a jaywalker. And it was just simple and just almost like a cartoon. Jaywalker. And I said, my God, that seems familiar. You know? And the lights began to come on for me. And I kept reading the book. And I read in a book where it says, if when you honestly want to, you find you cannot quit entirely. Or when drinking, you have little or no control over the amount of alcohol you drink, you're probably an alcoholic. And it was just a moment of illumination for me. It was like the lights came on. I think God spoke to me in that simple sentence. And then when I saw Jerry again that brought the meetings in, I ran up to Jerry and just said, please tell me what to do, tell me what to do, tell me what to do. And I was gifted with willingness. I love the name of this place, the How Place. And if you're new, John, and Mike, we have three essentials here. And it's honesty, open-mindedness, and willingness. And the book promises us that those three things will give us a basis for a program of success that cannot fail. And I've been here for 28 years. And let me tell you what, honesty, open-mindedness, and willingness opens a lot of doors in the spiritual life and in Alcoholics Anonymous. It's a good place to start. So I had the book Alcoholics Anonymous, and I had a guy named Jerry that was willing to guide me through the steps and do for me what I spoke of earlier. And I got down to business plan of recovery in the book Alcoholics Anonymous. And I did a third step with him and started doing a fourth step. And if you're new and you're worried about that fourth step, I don't think I can do this. This is over. This could drive me out the door. I can't stand to look at the truth about myself. I've got good news. That list that we're asking you to write, that's not a list of who you are. That's a list of who you aren't. That's what we're going to get rid of. Four times in our text it says, we're going to get rid of it. We're going to get rid of it. We're going to get rid of it. You're in a hot air balloon. You want to go higher. What do? You get rid of something and you can go higher. A statue of a woman, beautiful statue of a woman, long flowing gown. They asked the sculptor, how did you do that? He said, I got rid of what was ugly and this is what was left. That's what we're going to do in this house cleaning process. We're going to get down to who you really are and get rid of who you aren't. And that's what Jerry began with me. And I just got busy in Alcoholics Anonymous, right there incarcerated. A lot of people say, well, how could this program work for you in a nasty, rotten, filthy snake pit hole like you ended up in? And I've got good news. There's not a place so lost. There's not a place so alone. There's not a place so dirty that God can't get in there and help you stay sober if you mean business. There's another side to that coin. They don't have a nice enough place either. They take alcoholic and put him in the most wonderful place, all the frills, every amenity. If you don't mean business, you can't have this deal. Alcoholics Anonymous is not for those who need it, and it's not for those who want it. Alcoholics Anonymous can only work for people who do it. So get busy. It's up to you. And nobody's holding you back. You've got a room of people that are for you, that are with you. An army, it looks like, in this room, of people that are willing to care for you and take you by the hand and walk through the fire with you, but not for you. You're going to have to go and do that. But we'll certainly support you and care about you and hold you up while you're doing it. And we did it too. Nobody's going to ask you to do something you hadn't done, that they hadn't done. We'll ask you to do what we've been required to do that has given us what we've been given today. I'd like to tell you, when I went before the judge, told him how great I was doing in AA, he said, wow, we've never had anybody really want to change their life before. You can go home. That did not happen for me, and I got my first 2 years of sobriety in the Florida State Penitentiary. And I got busy in Alcoholics Anonymous in the camp that I was in, and what our book promises started happening for me. I grew in effectiveness and understanding, and I had a hope, a burning hope inside of me that I believed, and I was willing to believe, that God was doing for me, and that I had found the missing piece that I'd always been searching for. My missing piece was Alcoholics Anonymous, what I'd needed all my life and didn't know. And I'd found you, I'd found you, I'd found you. Thank you, God, I found you. I found them, I found them. And I know where to go, and I know what to do, and they'll tell me what I don't know. and I'll be free and I can have a life. That was my hope. I can have a life. And after 2 years, I was released, and I went. Two guys picked me up and took me straight to a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. I was scared to death. I didn't know this was going to happen. Fear visited me in a way I'd never experienced before. Felt like I had prison written across my forehead. September 1986. And we went in the room. A few people were sharing. I put my head down. I said, well, they went around the room sharing. I said, when it's my turn, I'll say my name. And then I'll say, pass. And I won't tell them I just got out of jail. And a few people shared. And I said, it'll be my turn in a minute. And I'll say, Lee, pass. I won't tell them. And then it was my turn. And I said, my name's Lee. I just got out of jail. And the guy chairing the meeting said, well, we're glad you're out of jail. And we've had other people come here out of jail. And we've had some come from here to jail. And then back here. So you didn't care where I'd been and you didn't care what I'd done. All you cared about was what I was willing to do about my recovery and how you could help me. And that's all I've ever found in Alcoholics Anonymous, was people that wanted to help me no matter what. I've never been asked to leave a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I've never been told that it's too bad that I couldn't make it here. I've always heard, Lee, if you'll do it, it'll work for you. If you put forth the action necessary, it'll work for you. And if you don't drink today, you'll never have to take another drink, because it's always today. And if you don't drink, you can't get drunk. And everybody got around me and wanted just to make sure that I had the best opportunity at this thing that I could possibly have. And first thing I saw was everybody had a sponsor. I said, a sponsor? Yeah. It looked like the popular thing to do. And I said, I wanted to be popular. So I asked this guy named Butch. Don't ever ask anybody named Butch to be your sponsor. Don't ask anybody named Butch or Killer to be your sponsor. Boy, that guy, he was something else. I know I went to Butch once. I thought he ought to loan me a little money. He told me to shut up. He said I was stupid. He said, get in there and go down and sit close to the podium. That's where the stupid people sit. No offense. Anyway, it wasn't very long at all. Butch really helped me. He was just what I needed. And it wasn't very long at all. Butch moved away. And I had lost some of that madness or that desire that I had had. And it took me a little while to ask for another sponsor. Not long, because crazy hit me real quick. And I was in the meeting just not long after that. And I don't know what the topic was. I shared something. And then I just got up and walked out of the room. And I don't even know what I said, but it must have been, I don't know if this thing's working for me or not. But anyway, I walked out, and a guy named Roy got up and followed me out of that meeting. You guys were talking about the cups and what these people that led you and guided you and saved you meant to you. Well, Roy was that for me. Roy wanted to be my friend. And Roy had had an experience with the book Alcoholics Anonymous. And he started me in the book Alcoholics Anonymous. Saved my life. And I could tell you a bunch of Roy stories. One, Roy could really work on cars. Man, that guy loved to fix cars. And so I was new, and of course, I had a new person's car, and it didn't always run. But man, I'd call Roy up. I'd say, Roy, I think I need a little sponsorship over here. And he'd say, you can't get it started, can you? I said, no, Roy. He'd come over and fix my car. And one time he came over and he was monkeying with it, and he says, you got a screwdriver? I said, yeah, and I popped the trunk open. He looked over in my trunk, and I had a big hatchet, big axe in there, short one. He said, what you got that axe in there for? I said, you know, Roy, in case. He said, in case of what? In case some old lady cuts you off in traffic? Get rid of it. I'm So, okay. Let me tell you, these sponsors, they really know what they're doing. That was 26 years ago, and I want you to know I've never had one experience that I said, this is going to call for the axe. You know? So they really know. They really know. So anyway, I had 11 jobs the first 18 months that I was out. I wasn't any better at that sober than I was drunk. Every job I had had one thing wrong with it. They wanted me to work. Man, I was having a terrible problem. I mean, you know, work fascinated me. I could watch it for hours. I knew everything about work. I'd been penitentiary. They first thing they did the day I got there, they gave me a job I didn't want that I couldn't quit. You know, they were real serious about that work thing. They had a guy with a gun standing there and make sure you do it. Half a day to those guys is 12 hours. So I knew all about work. When that guy with that gun turns around, you stop. So I had poor work ethic. Anyway, I had a bunch of jobs real quick, and what am I going to do? And I, you know, very embarrassed, and I'd go to the meetings, and I, you know, ashamed of that. But also, I'd been locked up a couple of years, and I had never been to meetings with women. And I knew everything a man had to say. I'd talked to men for 2 years. I wouldn't know what a woman had to say. So I'd beeline it over to a woman, you know, first thing in the meeting. And way on the other side of the room, old-timer. Old, horrible, ruthless people. These old-timers. God. Very intrusive. And I wasn't talking to him at all. And he interrupted me talking about recovery and asked me if I had a job. Very embarrassing. No. And so, get a job. And guy walked over to me, handed me a business card, said, I'll put in a good word for you. They need some people immediately. I'll tell them about you and call him. Just call this guy. So the next day I call this guy up. I said, yes, do you have any jobs? Yes, we need some people immediately. Come down here tomorrow. Bring your resume. Click. All I heard was resume. I said, my God, I can't do that. What am I going to put on some kind of resume? State prison, state prison, state prison. Whew, boy, I'm glad I called. So I went to the meeting that night. You know how they are in AA. You know how they are. I got there and I got to the door. And at the door, you know, everybody knew I was going to call that guy. And that woman was standing there at the door and waiting to... And then the old-timer, he was there. And my sponsor was standing there. And some other people that were acting like they liked me, they were standing there. And did you get the job? And did you call the guy? And what happened? We've been praying for you to get the job. I said, yeah, he wanted a resume. So I didn't go. They said, well, that resume, that's just the truth. You just tell them the truth. And that's all they want. And I said, the truth? That's the dumbest thing I've ever heard of in my life. I'll never do that. Bad thing to say. Immediately. And I thought she was my friend. She goes, you'll never do it. That's unwillingness. Lee's unwilling. There were 40 people in the room. About 15 seconds, it went all the way around the room. Lee's unwilling. Lee's unwilling. He's unwilling. He's unwilling. By the time it came back around, it was Lee's unwilling. And he won't tell the truth. And he's dishonest. Man, I said, they said, you don't have a chance here. I said, okay, I'll go. So God, man, I went back to where I was living. And I prayed. I said, God, what am I going to do? It's going to be so humiliating. This is awful. I've got to go down this place. There's nobody to go with me. Everybody else has got a job. I'm the only one. If I go, you're going. If I go, you go with me. Next morning I got up. I said, okay, God, we're going down to this place. We're not going to be there very long. I walked into this guy's office, and he was really busy. He had a phone in each hand. He hung those phones up and said, sit down. I sat down. He said, where's your resume? I said, I don't have a resume. And he goes, well, do you have any experience in sales? And it's almost like a light went off in my mind. And I said, well, yeah, I've sold microwaves and stereos and appliances and guns and boats and cars and anything off somebody's porch. He goes, wow, you've got a lot of experience. Can you start tomorrow? I said, yeah, man. And I sold that guy's product like popcorn. You didn't have to sneak down the alley with it or keep it covered up with a blanket or hide it in the trunk of your car. You just walk up to anybody. And I don't think God minds it at all that we have a little something and do pretty good here in Alcoholics Anonymous. Listen to this. I'm 6 months out of a penitentiary after living a life of hell and madness. 6 months in AA. And I became a regular guy. I had a job. I had a car. I had clothes. I lived somewhere. I had people telling me, Lee, you can go back to school. I was down at the intergroup office one day, and I was looking at the pamphlets, and a little girl was standing there. She goes, how would you like to be on the service committee? I said, yeah, I'll be on the service committee. And I got on the service committee. After a year on the service committee, I said, what we're doing here is important. This is important. I must be important. I said, what we're doing here is valuable. This is valuable. This helps people. I have value. I have value. I started feeling so good about myself. A service in Alcoholics Anonymous. I began to feel good. I'd never felt that way before. I felt so good, I think, I bet I could go to school. I bet I could go back to school. I'm worth going to school. I went back to school and got an education out of the deal. I didn't know I was going to get that. After my sobriety, greatest blessing in my life today is my little 14-year-old daughter, Hannah. Now, you know where I came from. Now, you tell me. I can have something like that? I can have something that wonderful? What will God withhold? What would God withhold from any of us? God has good things for us. God has wonderful things for us. Here's my experience. I burned my life to the ground. The best I could do is I burned my life to the ground. Nothing, nothing left. When the world looked at me, they said, there's nothing there. There's nothing there. And I came to a room called Alcoholics Anonymous. I got a copy of a book called Alcoholics Anonymous, and I asked a man who was familiar with that book in Alcoholics Anonymous to help me. And we began a house cleaning process. As the result of when the garbage of my life, as it was being removed, God started pouring good things into my life. It's as if God had always been standing there with a great life, with a wonderful life just for me, going, gosh, I wish I could give this life to Lee. I want him to have it so bad. I want him to have it. I love him so much. But there's no room in Lee's life for this life, because Lee's life is full of Lee. And as me started being removed out of my life just started filling up with good stuff. Let me tell you what, I've got 28 years of good stuff in my life. I don't think there's anything in Alcoholics Anonymous I hadn't gotten out of this deal. But I'll tell you this, I know this, the best is still yet to come. The best life that I've ever known is still before me, because what God started in me 28 years ago is still happening. It's still happening. It's still happening. There's more, there's more, there's more. A lot of us I came to Alcoholics Anonymous pretty confused about this higher power deal. But I heard a story, saw it on TV, that really is a good picture of what I accept today as a higher power in Alcoholics Anonymous. It's a true story. 1989, a father in Armenia walked his son to school one morning, and he took him to the steps of the school and left him there and walked several blocks where he was working. That day in Armenia, they had an earthquake, And they don't build buildings in Armenia the way they build them out in California. They build them out of rock and stone and brick. And that whole city was absolutely just destroyed. And that father drug himself out of the rubble of the building that he was in, cut, bleeding, injured, and started running those blocks, those three or four blocks, to where that school was. And when he got to the school, it was just a pile of stone. And he ran to the top of the pile and started throwing rocks and throwing bricks and screaming out his son's name, Armand, 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 Armand. And people would come to him and they'd say, "You're cut, let us bandage you. You're hurt, let us help you." And he would scream out, "Help me find my son, help me find my son." And they'd walk away saying, "He's delirious, he's in shock, we cannot help him." 36 hours later, he was still standing there throwing rocks and throwing bricks and screaming out his son's name. After 36 hours, he heard something. And he said, "Armand, is it you?" And he heard, "Yes, Father, it's me." He said, "Son, are you all right?" He said, "Yes, Father, I'm all right. There are 13 of us in here." I told them that if my father is alive, he will not rest until he saves me. And after he helps me, he'll help you too. You new people, I've got real good news. Here in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, we have a father. In the fifth chapter of this book, Bill Wilson wrote, "He is the Father. We are His children." In the closing of Dr. Bob's story, Dr. Bob wrote, "Your Heavenly Father will never let you down." Here in a program of Alcoholics Anonymous, Al-Anon and Alateen, we have a Heavenly Spiritual Father who will not rest until He saves you. He will not rest until He reaches you. And after He helps you, He's going to use you to help somebody else. I love you and thank you for helping me stay sober today.